Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, New York Rangers fans, and welcome to episode 133 of the New Ice City podcast. I'm your host, Vincent Mercogliano of the USA Today Network, and we have a lot to get to this week in what's turned out to be a pretty busy time for the New York Rangers, and I know there's a lot of stuff that you guys want to discuss on this week's episode, so let's dive right in. I'm going to play some clips this week from head coach Peter Laviolette that explain some of the lineup decisions and some of the roster moves that have happened or are about to happen. There's definitely a lot of newsy kind of stuff that I wanted to address, so we're going to make this one of those episodes where I play some of the clips from conversations with Laviolette in the last day or so. But I also want to start here with more of a big picture view of the team that is at a little bit of a crossroads right now. I've found myself in the last few days thinking back to early December, which really when this slide that we're looking at with the Rangers, at least from a wins and losses perspective, started. And as many of you who listen regularly will remember, we had our buddy Steve Valiquette from MSG Network on the show. And at that point in early December, the Rangers had either the best or very close to the best record in the NHL. But Valley, who typically is a guy who we know played for the team, roots for the team, takes a pretty optimistic view of the team, had some real concerns about the way that they were defending and some of the underlying metrics that he was seeing that were suggesting there were holes here. There were things that were happening, even though the Rangers were winning at that time. And at that time, I believe the Rangers had just come off of that bad loss in Ottawa, which really started this little skid that they're on. They've had quite a few ups and downs in the last month, so it really hasn't been a consistent skid. I don't want to make it seem like they've been losing for a month straight now, but there have been a very inconsistent month or so for the Rangers. And at the time, Valley was saying, hey, this stuff is telling me that this team still has some flaws. This team has some stuff to clean up. And what we've seen is a team that has been getting hammered, especially off the rush, for a good portion of the season. And now what we're seeing more recently is that they're paying for it in a big way. As I wrote the other night after their loss on Monday night at Madison Square Garden to the Vancouver Canucks, which was a pretty disheartening loss for the Rangers, the harsh reality is that they've been a 500 team for over a month now. 8-7-1 in their last 16 games. So in their last 16 games, they've only won half of them. And now, more recently, 4 losses in their last 6 games. So that is really making a lot of the concerns that I think even a couple weeks ago were pretty easy to sweep under the rug. Now, because we have this larger sample size where the results have been very inconsistent, they've had good games, they've had bad games, it's pretty much been an even split between the two. Now, all of a sudden, I think those concerns are much more at the forefront of our mind. Now, I want to be clear. I still believe this is a good team. We're going to dissect some of the problems right now. I still believe that they are one of maybe 5 or 6 teams that have a legitimate chance to come out of the Eastern Conference. But there are clear flaws that must be addressed if they want to avoid another disappointing postseason. There's a lot of things to like about this team, but there are clearly things about this team that I think will be a hindrance for them once it really comes down to playing the best teams in the league in a seven-game series kind of setting. We're going to address a lot of those areas, but it has to start here. It has to start with team defense. Just to look at some of these numbers, because as I've been pulling them up on my own in the last handful of days, they've been pretty striking, some of them. Up until Thanksgiving, the Rangers were allowing only 2.06 goals per 60 minutes at 5-on-5. So it's just about two goals a game at 5-on-5, or two goals per 60 minutes at 5-on-5. That was one of the best averages in the NHL. Since Thanksgiving, and it's a pretty robust sample size of about 22 games now, that average has jumped by more than a full goal to 3.08. So all of a sudden, they're averaging a full goal more allowed per 60 minutes at 5-on-5. That, by the way, in these last 22 games, ranks 28th in the league. So they've gone from one of the better defensive teams in the league to now one of the worst for a solid month plus. There are a variety of reasons for this, but it starts, as we heard from Valley, with the dangerous chances that they're allowing off the rush. A lot of the ways that they are getting bitten recently are coming from other teams attacking them in transition, specifically with odd man rushes. There have been far too many two-on-ones, three-on-twos, situations where the Rangers are outnumbered coming back into their own zone, and oftentimes that leads to what you would call a high-danger scoring chance for the opposition. This has been a fatal flaw of the Rangers for years. This was the topic by far that Gerard Gallant harped on in his two seasons with the team. When the Rangers got themselves into trouble, it was because of a lot of those risky east-west kind of passes or turnovers or poor breakouts or all these different ways where you have the puck on your stick and then you make a mistake that leads to the other team all of a sudden having it, and you all of a sudden are chasing them back into your own zone. And a lot of times those are the best scoring chances that you're going to give up in a game. So the Rangers are giving up clearly far too many of those recently. I texted Valley actually this morning to get an update on where the Rangers stand in some of these categories. And the Rangers, for the full season, this isn't just these last 16 games or these last 22 games, this is the full season. For the full season, the Rangers rank dead last, 32nd in the league in expected goals against off the rush at 5-on-5. Overall, they're 21st in the league in expected goals against. So they have slipped to the back of the pack defensively. Now, their PK still rates pretty highly. Their expected goals against in the D zone is actually top five in the league. So when they're settled in their structure, and maybe if another team has a possession, the Rangers have actually been defending for the most part well in those situations. But where we've seen them get bit, where they certainly got bit in that loss to Vancouver the other night, is again off the rush in transition. And it's a habit that we felt like early in the season Peter Laviolette magically seemed to get rid of. That first month and a half or so of the season, the Rangers were so disciplined and structured, and we were raving about the 1-3-1 and all the different ways that they were slowing teams down in transition. For that first month or so of the season, I remember looking, they ranked as one of the best teams in the league as far as giveaways. They were allowing half as many per game for a stretch as they did last season. But I just had a conversation in the locker room with Ryan Lindgren about this today. All of a sudden, those habits have crept back into their game. And the players are keenly aware of this. This is nothing new. This isn't unique to this season. And there are a variety of factors that lead to that. It's not just one thing. Peter Laviolette, the last few days, has specifically been stressing neutral zone and avoiding neutral zone turnovers, and also clogging up the neutral zone more effectively, as we saw them do earlier in the season. The Rangers have been largely losing the neutral zone battle in recent games, whereas that was a strength for them earlier in the season. And we know that that's an area where when you do make a mistake, it's quickly going to start going the other way and quickly going to lead to maybe one of those odd man rush opportunities for the other team. So that certainly has been an area of emphasis in the last couple days. Turnovers, more largely, those risky passes that we know the Rangers get into the tendency of making are creeping back into their game recently, and that is something that they have been actively trying to address. And it's not just in the neutral zone either. It's also breakouts. Breakouts are an area where the Rangers have gotten themselves into trouble in the past when it comes to exiting their own defensive zone. Once they do get possession, how do you transition it forward? That's really where a lot of this comes from, is advancing pucks and being able to do that effectively without, in the process of doing that, all of a sudden handing possession back to the other team because of a bad decision. So breakouts, that was something that I spoke to at length with Lindgren about this afternoon. He feels like it just hasn't felt as cohesive. They've been fumbling pucks. They've been making mistakes. There have been ill-advised passes. There's just been situations where all of a sudden now where you thought you had possession, you thought the whole team is going in one direction, and now all of a sudden it's coming back in the other direction. And it also extends to offensive zone entries. Laviolette has talked about the offensive blue line. And that when the Rangers do get there, what are they doing with the puck? He wants to see them get more pucks behind the defense, make more defenders turn around. Obviously, we don't want them to be a strictly dump and chase team. I don't think that is an effective way to win games, and you're not going to ask players like Artemi Panarin to consistently play that way. But the idea is to get the pucks successfully into the offensive zone, hammer them on the forecheck, and set up your possession that way. So that is something where it seems like they've maybe gotten to the offensive blue line sometimes recently, and then all of a sudden they attempt a cross-ice pass, and all of a sudden now that's intercepted and you're in trouble again. So the general decision-making is really kind of the big theme here that Laviolette and some of the players, frankly, have brought up repeatedly. That even extends to line changes, which was an area where the Rangers were making some really poor decisions in that game on Monday against Vancouver. I thought the shift that epitomized the shortcomings that the Rangers have had recently was the fifth goal, I believe it was, of that game, where it was just one bad decision, one big mistake after another. It starts with Nick Bonino, who has the puck in the neutral zone, and for whatever reason decides to try to make a cross ice pass. I'm not even sure exactly who he was trying to pass the puck to, but it ends up directly on the stick of a Vancouver player, so a clean interception for the Canucks there. Meanwhile, Bonino's two line mates, who in that situation should have been busting it to back check and get back and defend because they had just turned the puck over, Othman and Cooley are both skating to the Rangers bench for a line change. So you're basically handing them an odd man rush on a silver platter because you only have three skaters out of five who are actively playing hockey on the ice in that moment. And then at the end of the shift, you got the two defensemen, Adam Fox and Eric Gustafson, I believe it was, who were on the ice at the time. And it wasn't really their fault that the odd man rush was coming down the barrel at them in their face, but it was almost like they gave up on the play. You see them just kind of reaching their stick out, sort of half-heartedly trying to make a defensive play there instead of really aggressively trying to get the puck back, trying to close off a passing lane, trying to do something, anything to prevent that odd man rush from turning into a goal. So it was just a really ugly shift, definitely at the forefront of my mind. I'm sure there have been other shifts we could point to this season, but for me, it was probably the ugliest shift of the season. Maybe that's some recency bias, but at least that's what's on my mind coming out of that game. So ugly, ugly stuff. I went back and watched every single one of those goals multiple times from that game, and it was really just a smorgasbord, I would say, of mistakes that the Rangers were making. And it's not like they were getting lit up all game. It's not like the Canucks had these long, extended offensive zone possessions. The Rangers actually outshot them 42-26 in that game. So the Rangers were generating quite a bit themselves. The Rangers are showing that they are capable of producing offense, I think increasingly so recently. They had ample chances to go ahead and score in that game, but the way Peter Laviolette put it was the chances that they allowed were loud chances, meaning they were high danger, grade A, whatever it is you want to call them. They were the Rangers making mistakes that put themselves in very vulnerable positions. And then the Canucks, who are a fast team, a highly skilled team, definitely looked like they were faster than the Rangers in that game. They are all of a sudden coming right back at you in a flash and getting some quick transition, counter, easy goals off of the Rangers because of the mistakes that they were making. You couple all of that with the fact that Igor has not consistently looked like Igor recently. His save percentage is now at 904 on the season, and that is through 25 appearances. And all of a sudden, it's compounded itself to a point where those warts that maybe in the past, or certainly in the past, we've seen Igor cover up. We've seen the superb goaltending from this team make up for some of those mistakes that the team has made. Well, now that's not really happening. And I want to be fair. It's hard to blame Igor. Again, I went back and watched every single one of those goals from the other night. None of those, I think, were directly on him. They were all the results of him being put in a really bad situation and the Canucks having what I think would be considered a high-danger scoring chance. But the reality is that we're used to seeing him make at least some of those saves. Obviously, no one is going to make all of those saves, but you're used to him bailing you out in certain situations. And that can change the whole complexion of a game because you could go from giving up a goal in a backbreaking situation. It's sort of demoralizing for the team to all of a sudden your goalie makes a big save when he was sort of hung out to dry. The whole bench gets pumped up. The guys on the ice get pumped up. That can often lead to you then coming back on the counterattack for a quick strike chance yourself. It can change the whole outcome of a game. It can certainly change the momentum of a game. So you're used to seeing Igor doing that, and he's not doing that recently. He's had some good games, but he's also had some not so great games. And the inconsistency of the defense coupled with the inconsistency of the goaltending has been compounded into this problem now for the Rangers, where they're allowing a lot of goals. They now have 9 times this season out of 39 games allowed 5 goals or more in a game. So you're sort of getting these lopsided games. You're getting these games where it just feels like they're not just beat, but they're run out of the building. And again, it's not like they are under siege the entire time in that game against Vancouver. It's not like the Canucks had possession of the puck for the entire game or for 2/3 of the game or whatever. It's just that the Rangers are putting themselves in these situations where all of a sudden it's that quick strike attack. All of a sudden they're shooting themselves in the foot. Their own mistakes are causing them to be put in these very vulnerable positions. The defense, in my opinion, has been the primary issue. The goaltending has sort of been a secondary issue, that the defense letting the goaltending down, but the goaltending isn't bailing the defense out. So it kind of goes hand in hand a little bit there. And I think behind those things on my list of concerns right now would be the 5-on-5 scoring. I've had a lot of fans reach out to me about that, but I have to tell you, you look at the numbers, they're actually significantly up from the beginning portion of the season. The Rangers, as I mentioned, for that first month plus of the season up until Thanksgiving, were only allowing about 2 goals per game, per 60 minutes, I should say, at 5-on-5. And now they're up to over 3 goals per 60 minutes at 5-on-5. So they've made a big jump in a negative way there. At the same time, early in the season, they were scoring about 2 or so goals per 60 minutes at 5-on-5. And that number has jumped up to, I believe, 2.8 in the last 20-plus games. So the offense, from a 5-on-5 perspective, I think has been much improved. But I also think, as I wrote the other night, the scales are being tipped a little bit too much. And Mika Zibanejad touched on this after the game. The Rangers are all of a sudden feeling like because of the opportunities that they're giving up defensively, because they're falling behind in a lot of these games and sort of being forced to play catch up, that is resulting in them feeling like they need to score every shift. They need to score on every opportunity, and it's allowing a lot more of that risk to creep into their game. Now, in some ways, going for those high-skill plays is leading to a better offensive output for them. But at the same time, it's clearly doing, in a lot of situations, more harm than good because they're allowing way more goals than they were in the early portion of the season. I think they need to get back to finding that balance. They need to get back to playing that patient style that they were playing in the first month or so of the season, which is to say, they were willing to wait for their opportunities. They were willing to grind you down. They were prioritizing making things difficult defensively for the opposing team. They were not letting them transition cleanly through the neutral zone. They were forechecking aggressively, and they were doing all of those little things that weren't giving the other team easy opportunities. The opportunities the other team were getting were low grade. They were low danger. Now, all of a sudden, they're giving up much more high danger stuff, and that is because I think in certain situations, they're selling out a little bit too much for offense. They're making bad decisions at the expense of team defense. The formula for this team to succeed is special teams, which remains their primary strength right now, arguably the best special teams in the league. You look at the power play as far as expected goals are concerned, number one in the league right now. As far as conversion rate is concerned, they've been top three pretty much all season in that category. So the power play, even the other night against Vancouver, that first power play was beautiful when Mika Zibanejad set up Vincent Trocheck for a goal. The power play has been a clear strength. The PK has been top 10 in the league pretty much all season. So the PK is very good as well. I think you combine the two, you have arguably the best special teams in the league. So that is a pillar for this team. And the other pillar is goaltending, which we just talked about. That needs to be better. I think playing better defense, though, would go a long way to helping that cause. And then the last factor that I think the Rangers had been doing effectively early in the season that was helping the special teams and helping the goaltending and certainly helping from a wins and losses perspective is making it difficult on the other team to score at 5-on-5. Again, with that aggressive forecheck, with clogging up the neutral zone, with cutting down on their own turnovers. As many of the players have noted in the last few days, if they do all of those things, the goals will come. Whether it's power play, whether it's counterattacks, whether it's stars like Artemi Panarin doing their thing, and you know over the course of a game he is going to get his opportunities, they're going to find enough ways to score. Remember how much we raved about that Boston game when the Rangers played them to a 2-1, I believe it was, overtime win, and they just waited. They didn't make mistakes. They stayed patient throughout the game, and eventually they got rewarded for it. I think that that style is more of the style that they're going to need to play to have success. They need the skill plays. They need all of that to happen, but it can't come at the expense of defense. It can't just be completely selling out and leaving yourself hung out to dry all the time, which is what they've been doing far too often. Now, with all of that being said, I will acknowledge this. I don't think that the 5-on-5 offense has necessarily been a problem recently, but the forward depth as a whole has definitely increasingly become a glaring issue, I think, in my mind, especially as some of these injuries have lingered. The hot topic, certainly the one that I've heard the most from fans, whether it's email or tweets or what have you, is Blake Wheeler. He has become, I think, the easy punching bag for Rangers fans recently, and certainly he has not worked out in the top line right wing spot. I wrote this at the quarter season mark when I did that column where I had 20 thoughts about where the Rangers stood. And one of the thoughts in there was Blake Wheeler is not the answer on the top line. So I'm certainly not going to sit here and dispute that he hasn't worked out there and that he looks like he's certainly past his prime and a step behind and is not the guy that, if you're thinking seriously about a playoff run, the guy that you're going to want on your top line in that spot with Mika Zibanejad. But the larger point, I guess, I've tried to make to some fans recently about that is, to me, it becomes the easy target, almost lazy to point at that and say, well, the reason that the Rangers haven't been doing well is because Blake Wheeler shouldn't be on the top line. You cannot pin this on one spot or one player, because quite frankly, if we're talking about that line, and as we've addressed, I think the problems go much deeper than just one line. But if we're talking about that one line, Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider haven't been all that great from an offensive standpoint at 5-on-5 this season either. I looked this up the other day and it made me raise my eyebrows. Artemi Panarin so far this season at 5-on-5 has 28 points. That's the same number that Zibanejad and Kreider have combined at 5-on-5. So you can point fingers at the easy target, and I get it. Zibanejad and Kreider are beloved players. For fans to offer criticism at them versus offering criticism at the old new guy, it's much easier to point to the old new guy. And again, I'm not sitting here and defending him or saying that I think he's the right guy to play in that spot. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that as a whole, that line hasn't been very productive, and I think the blame has to be spread around a bit there. But to me, even more so, because it's hard to get too worked up over that top right wing spot right now, because I just don't think, given the injuries, they have any great options there at the moment. That's the unfortunate reality, and we're going to get more to that in a few minutes. But I think what's stood out to me even more recently is that the bottom six has become a bit of a black hole. That checking line with Barclay Gaudreau and Jimmy Vesey, and for a while it had Tyler Pitlick, and I even thought the couple games that Will Cooley played there was really effective. They've been good at times. They've been definitely much better since the beginning of the season when I thought they struggled the last month or so. I think they've been good. That game on Saturday night in Montreal, I thought they were the Rangers' most effective line. That line has been pretty solid, but then you look at what they're getting ready to trot out Thursday night in St. Louis as a fourth line, and you're talking about Nick Bonino, Johnny Brodzinski, and Jake LeCision. To put it mildly, that's not great. That is not a fourth line that you're looking at and saying that is a Stanley Cup contending team right there. No knock on those guys. You know, Bonino, I think, is going to be a role player the Rangers intend to count on. I think he will certainly be in a playoff lineup for them. Brodzinski is a guy we've talked about before who has really done everything he could do at the AHL and probably deserves this opportunity. LeCision, that's a bit of a head-scratcher there for sure. This is a guy who did not post a single point in 35 NHL games last year, but Hartford's banged up right now. Adam Edstrom is out. Riley Nash is out. So the Rangers don't have a ton of great options there, but it just goes to show you that, number one, the Rangers certainly need to get healthier, and it does look like Kaapo Kakko is getting very close to a return. We'll talk about that more in a minute. And then number two, they need to bring in at least one impact forward at the trade deadline. That is clear. The forward depth here has become concerning, and that is an area that needs to be addressed. I'm not sure how much a prospect like Brennan Hoffman is going to factor into those plans, which sort of leads me into the first clip that I want to play. Last week, I had to come back and re-record the final segment of the program because after I had initially recorded, we found out that Brennan Hoffman was getting the call-up. Now, here we are a week later, and he's already been sent back down to Hartford. He did get a taste. He did get to play three NHL games to sort of get his career started and get his first taste of what life in the NHL is like. The first game was encouraging. That win over the Chicago Blackhawks last week, I thought Hoffman did some pretty good things, and there was some stuff in there to feel good about. The last two games were a different story. Played less than 8 minutes in both of them. Clearly, the Rangers don't feel like he's ready, and so he was sent back down to Hartford on Tuesday. And when we spoke to Peter Laviolette after that news came out, he addressed what his impressions were of Hoffman in that three-game sample size. So let's hear from Laviolette right now.
Well, I thought he had a good impact in the first game that he was up. I think things become, for young players, they become a little bit more challenging when you play some of the upper echelon teams in the league. And but I thought he did well. I mean, there's no major flaws. Or the first game, he had some impact offensively. I thought it was a little bit less the second game. But I thought he did some good stuff.
Okay, so two things I will say here about Othman. The first, and I had written this when he was first called up, is that I believe even more so now that the plan all along was to just play him for a few games, sort of give him a taste of life in the NHL, reward him for doing everything that they've asked so far with Hartford and playing pretty well by most accounts there so far this season. It was his birthday weekend, so maybe give him a little something to feel good about at that point in time, and then send him back down, hoping that what he learned from that experience would help him the next time he gets the call, that it would serve as motivation, that it would give him knowledge for what he needs to work on and where he needs to improve and what it's going to take to ultimately hold down a regular role in the NHL. And I don't think that that's a bad strategy. That is exactly what they did with Will Cooley last season. You saw Cooley come up, I think it was twice, if memory serves, but both times it was only for a few games, maybe one or two games one of the times and like three games the other time. And then he was sent back down. And then ultimately, I think that served him well coming into this season when he made the team out of training camp. And I'm sort of seeing a similar path now, I think, for Othman. I think the idea is that this is a development year. This is a preparation year. This is a learning year for him. And then the hope is that next season is when he's really an option for them as far as being a regular in the lineup. I think it's pretty clear that they feel he has more work to do, that there's more development to be done there. And that's all fair. We've talked about not rushing prospects before. And so from that perspective, I think it sounds like they're doing the right thing by him. But I'll also say this. It's a little peculiar the way that this whole thing played out while he was here, because I did think he had a really solid debut in that game against Chicago, led the team in shots on goal in that game with five. I think it was eight shot attempts. Laviolette said after the game that he noticed him the whole time, was physical, had some good hits, didn't make any defensive mistakes, created offensively. Laviolette rewarded him late in that game by giving him a shift up on the top line with Zibanejad and Kreider. It just seemed like he held himself pretty well in that game, and that maybe he would get more opportunity in the coming games. Then they go to Montreal on Saturday. I think he played four shifts. I don't have it in front of me, but that's what I'm remembering. Four shifts it was in the first period in Montreal, and didn't get any shots on goal, didn't notice him a ton. It wasn't like he really stood out in the first period of that game, but I also don't remember any glaring mistakes. Like, I don't think that something egregious happened in that first period in Montreal, but what did seem to happen after that period is that a decision was made to cut down on his ice time, because he basically went the last couple periods of that game barely playing at all. He was essentially benched for, I think, like 17 minutes at the end of that game, if you factor in the third period and overtime. He didn't play at all in that third period. I think he took one shift, or two shifts maybe it was, one or two shifts. And then for the last, I think it was 12-plus minutes of that period, didn't get a single shift, and then obviously did not get used in overtime. So he kind of got benched, if you look at it that way, in Montreal. And then you come into that Monday night game against Vancouver, and he was used sparingly. Once again, he ends up with like 7.5 minutes of ice time and really did not play a whole lot in that game. The second period, he went a long stretch without playing. And obviously, in both of those games, the Rangers fall behind. They're chasing the comeback. And Laviolette said, when we asked him about it, it wasn't anything that Othman or anybody else did, because other guys did see their ice time cut down as well. Nobody as drastically as Othman, but other guys did see their ice time cut down. He said it was more about wanting to double shift guys like Panarin and try to get themselves back into the game. So, I mean, I get that. I think that that's a little bit of a slippery slope. If you're going to play Artemi Panarin 25 minutes a game, you know, we're right in the middle of the season now. It's not really a sustainable thing, in my opinion. I think you got to save those bullets a little bit. And obviously the Rangers need to get to a place where they feel like they can rely on their bottom six a bit more in this tight game. Obviously, this shows what we talked about in the first segment, that there's a hole right now in the bottom six, and it's clear that the coach, when things are tight, when the situation is tense, does not trust them to play a whole lot. But Othman really bore the brunt of that. And again, I didn't see anything really glaring that made me think, oh, that guy, you can't afford to play him right now. I will say, I touched on this shift in the Vancouver game on the fifth goal, where Othman and Cooley went for that line change after the Bonino turnover, and it was just really poor judgment on their parts in that situation. So that, to me, had that happened, let's say, early in the Montreal game, that would have maybe warranted a benching or warranted having your ice time cut down for sure. But that didn't happen until the end of his final game. So it's a little peculiar how little he was used in those second two games. Laviolette, you heard him in that clip mention playing upper echelon teams. Once the competition stepped up, he felt like Othman was maybe a little bit more exposed, or that was a little bit of a tougher environment to use him in. So I guess you can understand that a bit, although Montreal is not an upper echelon team. It's really only Vancouver, who looks really good, by the way. I mean, you look at what they did on this trip to the East Coast. They have been like a buzzsaw. It wasn't just with the Rangers. But it just felt a little bit like very quickly there was a crack in that armor, or very quickly there was some doubt cast there, and all of a sudden it felt like Laviolette did not want to play him a whole lot, despite having that good debut that you heard him touch on in that answer right now. So the way that that all went down was a little bit of a head-scratcher, no doubt, but again, I do believe that the plan was just going to be for him to get a short stint. You did feel, or wonder, I guess I should say, about... was this a trial period? Could Othman play his way into a role down the stretch? Might that change the Rangers' thinking as we head toward the trade deadline? But this has me feeling more like they're not necessarily viewing him as a guy who's likely to play, let's say, in their top nine in the playoffs. I think this, again, is looking more like a development year for him. Now, that could change. He could go back down to Hartford and light it up and change everybody's minds and come back up and look really good and all of a sudden force his way back into the lineup. I can't rule that possibility out, but right now my gut tells me they think he needs more development, and it's probably going to be a year where he spends the majority of it with Hartford, and then next training camp is when it really becomes an attainable goal for him to carve out a spot in this lineup. So I think that that's where we stand right now. That would maybe be my big takeaway from this stint that he had. Some good in that first game, didn't really get to see a whole lot of him in the next two games, but I think this is still a player who has a lot of growth left to do and is going to be exciting potentially. I definitely think there are things to like there about him, but I still think that not rushing him is probably a wise move. All right. Let's get to our next clip. And this is about another rookie who, unlike Othman, is seeing an increase in his opportunities lately, and that would be Will Cooley. Cooley, when Othman was initially recalled and Pitlick went out with that injury, Cooley slid onto the line with Vesey and Gaudreau, and I thought had a couple really good games in that spot. But now, with the issues that we've seen on the top line and with the decision to move Wheeler off that line, we talked about how limited the options are for who to put up there. Well, Cooley is the guy who's going to get the next opportunity. He practiced there at right wing on that top line the last 2 days. And so what you're about to hear is me asking Laviolette about why he likes Cooley in that spot, and then you're also going to hear a follow-up question from our buddy Colin Stevenson. So let's play that clip, and then we'll talk a little bit more about that decision.
I know you've said that you're encouraged by the way he's playing and that you don't see many mistakes from him, that sort of thing. How would you see him fitting there? Like, I know he's a guy that gets to the dirty areas. Kreider's a guy that does that as well, but how do you see them maybe playing off of each other?
Yeah, I mean, Will's probably one of our more physical guys. You know, he gets in on the forecheck, he bangs bodies, he... You're right, him and Kreider both go to the net front. Hides makes a living there and cools. You know, he was the reason for that goal on the road, just because he provided that screen. So, you know, he's, for me, he's a guy that can jump up there and make some noise. He's also scored like 7 goals. You know, so he's put the puck in the back of the net. And again, it was just practice as well.
Are you just sort of still learning about this guy? Like, he made the team, he had a role, he was in that line for a long time, and now it seems like you're trying in different spots. I mean, you still have stuff you need to figure out if he can do this.
Oh, I mean, I think sometimes gets lost in it, is we're found players that are missing from the lineup.
Sure.
And so that changes things. I mean, you know, if we were healthy, I'm not sure that would be the move, but, you know, we're not. And so, I mean, I think when you don't have all your assets available to you and you have to fill in different spots, at times you can try things, you can give it a little bit of time, you can look at things, but you may change it as well.
All right, so some interesting stuff there. And I do feel like, given the current available personnel, which again is extremely limited for Peter Laviolette, that Cooley makes some sense to get an opportunity up there. They gave the Wheeler thing a really long look. I think a very fair opportunity for them. They had ample chances to prove that they should stick together. And there were some flashes in there. There were some games, I think, especially a few weeks ago, where it seemed like they had stacked a few pretty good ones in a row together, and Mika had that point streak going, and Wheeler was at least contributing some points there for a bit. I think he had a few games stretched, 5 or 6 games, where he was averaging about a point per game, but it got stale again after that. It's certainly gotten stagnant, and I think Wheeler in the last handful of games has really struggled. We talk about the giveaways in that game against Vancouver. I think he was the leading guy as far as that statistic was concerned. And that's not a statistic you want to lead the team in the loss to the Canucks. So they needed to try something different. And ultimately, I think we all kind of deep down know which way the Rangers will want to go with that. And that's Kaapo Kakko, a guy that we're going to talk about a bit more in a minute. But Kaapo Kakko is not quite ready. He's getting very close, but not quite ready. And so given who they have available right now, Cooley makes a lot of sense, because outside of Panarin, Kreider, and Lafreniere, and we know that Panarin, Trocheck, Lafreniere line has been the Rangers' best far and away all season, and Laviolette has made it clear he has no intention of breaking them up, so those guys are off limits, and Kreider's already on that top line, so you're looking for a guy to play on the opposite wing from him. Who has been their next best winger so far this season? Well, Cooley, I guess, is probably of the available guys in that conversation. I thought he looked as good as he has all season in those few games that he got to play with Gaudreau and Vesey. And that's maybe where my hesitation would be, because even in talking to Jimmy Vesey about it, he called Cooley an ideal fit for that line. I mean, you go back and you watch their shifts in that Montreal game, they were hammering the Canadiens on the forecheck. It just seemed like they wore them down over the course of that game. The Habs just could not get out of their own end when that line was on the ice. They would get the puck in deep. Certainly, you talk about playing straight ahead. You talk about north-south. That's exactly what that line was specializing in. And then they were constantly digging pucks out, winning battles in the corners or behind the net, and earning themselves some really long extended possessions, and then they were flying around. I mean, Cooley was getting a lot of stuff done, as you heard Laviolette talk about, at the net front. I think he's really becoming more and more of an asset at that position, probably the next best guy, you might argue, besides Kreider on this team in that spot. Trocheck can do it as well, but obviously Trocheck is sort of a Swiss Army knife. He does a lot of different things. Cooley, as far as getting to those dirty areas, Laviolette calls them the hard areas, specializes there. Definitely one of the most physical presences on this team, but not just throwing hits for the sake of throwing hits. When I'm talking about the forecheck, Cooley was speaking to me about this. I sat with him in his locker, actually wrote about him at length the other day, had a really good conversation with him about the difference between being out there last year or early this season when he was thinking, don't mess up, don't make a mistake. And now he's at the point where he feels like he wants to assert himself in the game. He feels like when he's out there, he's trying to be a difference maker, which is kind of a cool evolution to think about for a guy of that age. But you see it. You see the way that he asserts himself on the forecheck. And defensemen, he's bearing down on them. They don't want that big 6'3", 6'4", 200, whatever it is, pound guy laying the lumber on them in that situation. So Cooley, I think, was really effective in that role with that line. Again, Montreal, I thought that they were the Rangers' best line. And so I felt like, hey, maybe he's finding a little bit of a home there. But given the desire to try something new there, given the fact that Wheeler wasn't working out there, Cooley is a guy that I guess it makes some sense to try him there. Another guy that I've mentioned and thought about in that spot would be VC. That would also require breaking up that checking line, but you're already doing that by moving Cooley off there because now they have Wheeler playing in that line with Gaudreau and VC, which doesn't seem like a great fit to me, quite frankly, but they're really limited right now because they basically had 11 healthy forwards once they sent Hoffman down. Now they call up Lecision. Obviously, you're not going to move Lecision up in the lineup. So VC would be maybe another guy I would consider there. But Cooley makes some sense. I do think he's earned a longer look. The concern there or the question there is going to be, can this guy play right wing? I asked him the other day. He said he has never, that he can recall, played right wing. He has always been a left winger at every level. So is it asking a lot to ask a rookie to do this on the fly in a position he's never played? Maybe. Cooley kind of made it sound to me like he thinks the emphasis that we put on it is overrated, that there's not a huge difference. He was saying offensively, once you're in the offensive zone, there aren't really any positions. You're all just moving around and trying to score. But defensively is the one area where you have to adjust a little bit. When you're coming back into your own zone. But he kind of said he does not think it's a big deal. He thinks it's a transition that he can make pretty easily. I think we maybe got into the habit of making a big deal out of it because we saw Lafreniere bounce back and forth so many times the last few years, and it turns out that if you actually give him an extended opportunity there, he could handle it. So obviously, Laviolette believes that Cooley can handle it, or at least wants to see if Cooley can handle it. But you also heard Laviolette say there that if they were fully healthy, this might not be the way that he would line it up. And I took that to mean that ultimately, I believe that spot will be Kaapo Kakko's. It's not that they were lighting it up when Kaapo Kakko played there earlier in the season. Obviously, they weren't. They played, I think it was 11 games together, and they only generated 2 goals in that span, but they also only allowed 1 goal in that span. So they were a very solid defensive line, and a lot of the underlying numbers, a lot of the analytics show that they were a very positive impact line when it comes to possession, when it comes to quality of scoring chances, when it comes to shot share. So all of those boxes, that line was checking. The one thing they weren't doing was finishing their opportunities. And if you give them more time, you have to believe that eventually, if they continue to produce those kind of underlying numbers, if they continue to play the way that they were playing, that the goals would probably start coming for them. Now, if you had a better alternative, I would say go for it, but I don't think there is one. It's almost by default, by necessity, that the Rangers need Kaapo Kakko to play that role, because who are your other right wing options? We've talked about Lafreniere. He's not moving from his current spot. So who are your other right wing options to play on the top line? Cooley, maybe he does enough in the next couple games to convince us that he should get a long look there. That is possible, I suppose, but I do believe that in an ideal lineup for the Rangers, that Cooley is a bottom six forward. I think he's a high quality bottom six forward who can forecheck, who can defend, who can play physical, who can play heavy, who can chip in some offense. I think he is, if you are visualizing what you want your playoff lineup to look like, if Will Cooley is skating on your third or even your fourth line, you feel like you got a pretty damn good lineup. If he's being asked as a rookie to play on the top line in a playoff setting, that might be biting off a little more than you can chew. That might be asking a little too much, in my opinion. Again, maybe he proves us wrong. He takes this opportunity and he runs with it. I'm definitely curious to see it. But I don't feel like that is the ideal situation for the Rangers. I don't feel like Jimmy Vesey is an ideal situation for the Rangers there. Obviously, we've talked about Blake Wheeler, and that has not looked all that great. I don't think he is the long-term solution in that spot. Brennan Hoffman is not the solution in that spot at this moment. He's another guy, a natural left winger you'd be asking to play out of position on top of what I think is a pretty clear feeling in the organization that he needs some more development time. So you really don't have a great option for that right wing spot right now. Kako almost has to be the guy. And when you look at what Wheeler did there, when you look at the struggles that that line has had since Kako went out, I think you can make a strong argument that this is the guy who needs to get more opportunity. This is the guy who you have to run with and sort of hope for the best. That's the situation that the Rangers are in right now because their right wing depth is just not anywhere near the level of their left wing depth as far as an organizational standpoint. So Kako, you drafted him number two overall. You went out and used big time draft capital on this guy. And the reason that you did that is because you expected him to be a top six forward. And even though the numbers are not good, 3 points in 20 games this season, we've seen him be productive in that spot with Mika and with Kreider. I think he was the best option that they had there last season, and I think he remains the best option, for better or worse, that you have to kind of roll with once he comes back. Now, is he going to step immediately into that spot and start playing big time minutes as soon as he comes back from injury? I'm not so sure about that. And that would lead us to our next clip, which was me asking Laviolette about exactly how Kako will fit once he does come back. So let's hear from Laviolette with that one right now.
Do you allow yourself with Kako to start visualizing what it might look like when he does come back as he gets closer here?
I think there's going to be a process for him when he does come back, when he is cleared, when he does get into games. There might be a ramp up period. He's been on for a little bit, and so we'll see how many practices he gets, see how he looks in practice. I thought he looked good today. Thought he was moving well, competed well, and so that's a positive step. And so I guess to answer your question, you're always thinking as a coach. You know, you're always looking down the road at your team and the scenarios and power plays, lineups, penalty kill. Where it might be the next day or where it might be in 5 days.
So you heard Laviolette there talk about a ramp-up period for Kaapo Kakko, and we've seen that play out in the last week. He returned to the ice with the team about a week or so ago now in one of those red non-contact jerseys. So he was skating with the team and puck handling and doing all those sorts of things, but not participating in every drill and certainly not allowed to be hit or anything like that. Then we came in for practice on Tuesday, and you had Kako wearing a yellow jersey, which sort of made us all chuckle, and we got a chuckle out of Laviolette with that as well. It felt like a stoplight where you went from red means stop to yellow means proceed with caution. And even though it was kind of a joke, that is kind of how they handled it, because Kako was participating in every drill on Tuesday. He was certainly mixing it up. He was engaging, not physically hitting guys or being hit, but definitely fighting for pucks and definitely involved in every situation and skating gassers and doing pretty much everything that you would do within a practice setting. And at that point, Laviolette said he's pretty much no restrictions. I guess they weren't allowed to hit him per se that day, but Laviolette basically made it sound like he's ready to compete. Is the way that he phrased it. And then what we saw on Wednesday was Kako back in a regular jersey, same as all the rest of the guys on the team. And on Wednesday, he was able to get hit. He was able to participate in everything. He was a full go that day. I tweeted out a little video of Alexis Lafreniere actually hitting him along the boards, and Kako seemed to respond well to that. To me, he looks like he's moving well. I don't see any kind of hesitation or hindrance or limp or anything like that. We do believe that this injury is related to his left leg, possibly his left knee, but clearly it was not anything significant enough to put his season in jeopardy, because he's back now skating with the team less than, I think, a month and a half or about a month and a half later, well under 2 months later, and looks like he's very much on the verge of returning. Now, I do not expect him to play Thursday in St. Louis. Laviolette didn't say for sure yes or no when I asked that question, but when I asked about Jake Lecision playing, he confirmed that yes, Lecision will be in the lineup, while saying that Kako is still day-to-day. So that pretty much answers that question for you, because Lecision would be the 12th forward in this situation. If Kako was ready to play, Lecision would absolutely not be playing. And we also saw it based on the line combinations at practice. That fourth line had Lecision skating in the middle between Bonino and Brodzinski. So I do not think that Kako is in play for Thursday night. The Rangers then will practice also on Friday, so that will be another practice day where Kako gets to continue to ramp up. Then the question becomes the weekend. And I asked Laviolette this question today: would you be comfortable having him come back in a back-to-back setting? Because the Rangers are playing the Washington Capitals in D.C. on Saturday and then back at home on Sunday. So I asked, would you allow him to come back in that setting? He didn't really want to answer that question. And my opinion is, A, they won't do it, and B, they shouldn't do it. I just don't think that that's smart to ask a guy who hasn't played in about a month and a half to step right back in and play back-to-backs coming off of an injury. So I think the wise move, the prudent move, the cautious move would be, if anything, you play him in one of those games. That is a possibility. I could see him maybe playing in the Sunday game at the Garden. Otherwise, I think the target date could be Tuesday. The Rangers are hosting the Seattle Kraken next Tuesday, and that would maybe be the date that I have circled where I do expect Kako to probably be in the lineup by then. Am I guaranteeing it? No. This is not based on anything I've heard for sure from a source or anything like that. This is just me connecting my own dots, me using my own logic. But I don't think you're going to see him Thursday. I don't think they would take that leap of having him play in back-to-backs over the weekend. Again, that feels a little bit irresponsible to me. I don't think, as much as he's been practicing in full, and these last couple of practices have been hard practices for the Rangers, getting back to that game shape level, I think any player will tell you, you need to actually play games to get there. So when you hear Laviolette talk about a ramp-up period, that tells me that they are going to make sure that this is calculated, make sure that there are very specific steps involved here. And I don't think that a step would go from not playing to a month and a half to playing two games in 24 hours. So I do believe that you're going to see Kako wait, not play Thursday, at most play once this weekend if he plays at all. And then I think, though, by next week, you can kind of safely target him potentially being back in the lineup. And then the question becomes, where does he slot back into the lineup? Because if we're talking about a ramp-up period, my initial feeling was they're going to ease him back in. They're going to start him maybe on the third line, limit his minutes a little bit, and have him sort of work his way back up and earn his way to getting that top-line opportunity. But given the state of the Rangers, given the way that they've been very inconsistent recently, this stretch of four losses in the last six games, that maybe adds to the feeling of not desperation, but urgency, I would say, right now. And given the revolving door that we've seen in that right wing spot on the top line and how there just doesn't seem to be a really good solution on the active roster right now, it feels like only a matter of time before Kako is playing there. So I'm very curious now, how quickly does he get that opportunity? Do they stick him right in there right off the bat? Maybe that depends on how Will Cooley looks there in the next couple games. Or do they start him in a third-line role and then slowly, maybe over the course of that West Coast trip that's coming up next week, find a spot to then elevate him? But again, if you're asking me about the vision for this lineup as we look ahead, where do the Rangers need to make moves? Who fits best where? And what are they going to be thinking about at the trade deadline? For me, I think the best thing that they could do is solidify their top six right now. For better or for worse, as I said before, it didn't light things up offensively. It certainly was not, they were not scoring as much as you would like when Kako played with Zibanejad and Kreider earlier this season, but it is their best option, I think, pretty clearly right now. I would, whether it's his first game back or a couple games in, have Kako on the top line with Zibanejad and Kreider, even though really, if we're being honest with ourselves, that's kind of their number two line right now. And then their second line that we really feel like is the top line of Panarin, Trocheck, and Lafreniere. You lock those six guys in, as far as I'm concerned, at least until the trade deadline. You let them play for the next 2 months in those spots, and you see how it turns out. But those have to be, I think, the forwards that carry them, especially from an offensive perspective, as we look ahead here. And then what I think you need to mold and experiment with and craft a bit is that bottom six. How do those pieces fit? I like the idea of getting back to that checking line with Cooley, Gaudreau, and Vesey. To me, that certainly makes some sense, but it's that final line that is still feels like you don't have great answers there. Does Blake Wheeler play with Nick Bonino? Those two guys seem like they have very differing skill sets, very differing strengths. Maybe that works in a weird way, but I kind of feel like that ends up being a line that gets buried. That ends up being a line that you don't have a whole lot of faith in. And then who is the extra piece on that line? Is it Johnny Brodzinski? Is it someone else who we're not thinking of right now? I guess it could be Tyler Pitlick maybe when he comes back, but Pitlick and Wheeler are both natural right wingers, so I'm not so sure that that works. It feels like clearly the Rangers need a piece. Now, you got your fingers crossed that eventually that piece could be Filip Hedl. Still no real updates for you guys there. He remains home in Czechia. Laviolette addressed this again the other day. He is still not in the United States and still a ways away from being ready. And of course, as we look ahead to the trade deadline, I think the Rangers internally are sort of having a two-pronged approach right now. There's one direction they will go if Hedl does come back, in which case they would get an important piece back, but it would come with the uncertainty of worrying about another injury, and it would come with very limited salary cap space for the trade deadline. Or do they believe that Hedl is going to remain on LTIR, in which case that is your plan, your second plan, whether you want to call it plan A or plan B, in which case you can go out and you can make a bigger trade deadline addition. You'd have a lot more salary cap space to work with if Hedl is out for the remainder of the season. I do not honestly believe that the Rangers know yet. I think they're working on a plan for both scenarios, and they're going to have to probably make a call on that by late February about exactly what direction they're going to go and exactly who they're going to pursue at the trade deadline. But whether you have a lot of cap space or a decent amount of cap space in the event that Hedl is out, or you have limited cap space in the event that Hedl comes back, I still think as we talk about the makeup of these forward lines, it's clear you're going to need to add at least one piece. You would love for Hedl to be the guy that could be that third line center, maybe play with Cooley and Wheeler or play with whoever it is that you get at the trade deadline. That would be a good look, I think, for the Rangers, certainly a better look than what they have right now. But I've also told you guys, I think increasingly so, the number one priority is going to be getting a center, because you need an insurance policy if Hedl can't play. And then if Hedl can play, you can always move a center to wing. It's much harder to move a wing to center. So I still believe that the number one trade deadline priority is going to be center. And I think as we talk about the makeup of this lineup, it's clear the Rangers are a piece or two short right now, even once they get Kaapo Kakko back. Without him, they're, you know, maybe two or three pieces short. So that is where they're at right now. And there's still a lot of unknowns, I think, as we look ahead. But again, I think I would solidify that top six and then experiment with that bottom six as much as you can and give yourselves as much information as you can possibly gather leading up to that trade deadline, when you're going to have some tough decisions to make and you're certainly going to need to add to solidify this roster. All right. With all of that said, we are going to end this week's episode. I have to apologize. I did not get a chance to get to your Twitter questions on this week's episode. This is the second week in a row. Unfortunately, we've had to kind of pivot on the fly here. There are a couple reasons for that. One of them being that my initial recording of our first segment, unbeknownst to me, crapped out in the middle of the recording. So you can imagine the frustration there. I thought I had recorded a 20-something minute segment and it only recorded the first 8 minutes. So we had to go back and re-record and reconfigure some things there, so that delayed the process as well. And now, honestly, it's getting late to the point where I got to go pick up my son from daycare soon. The good news is, I think with those clips that we played from LaViolette and all the different things that we addressed a whole lot on this week's episode, that I think I answered a lot of what I at least saw from glimpsing at it, the Twitter questions and the main topics that you guys wanted addressed on this week's episode. I promise next week, through hell or high water, we will get back to our usual final segment with the Twitter questions. But this is already a pretty long episode, and we again hit on Othman and Cooley and Kako and the team defense and the recent skid and all the different factors with the Rangers right now. And there's a lot to talk about with this team right now. It was like that smooth sailing for a while, and you felt like this almost feels too easy. And now they've hit this bump in the road. So how do they handle it? That is the big question now. Where do they go from here? They've had a month or so of basically playing 500 hockey, and you can get away with that based on the cushion that they built for themselves earlier in the year, but you don't want to see that continue for too much longer. So there are things that need to be corrected. They are certainly, from what I've watched to practice the last couple of days, actively trying to correct those things. And now we'll see how it plays out beginning Thursday night in St. Louis. So until next week, thank you all for listening. I appreciate all of you. I hope you're all staying warm and dry with all of this crazy weather that we've had recently, and hopefully not hurting yourselves or throwing out your backs with all the shoveling that needs to be done. So definitely stay warm, stay well, stay healthy, and I will talk to you guys next week.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.